This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 11th of November, 1959. The title of this lecture is Cycle of Action, Create, Destroy, Relative Importances. This tape is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Now, I want to talk to you about some advanced theory. Just right straight out of the blue. I want to talk to you about cycle of action, create, destroy. You already heard some of this in the Congress, right? All right, now I'm going to give you the real gin on it. By the way, one of you, a seminar leader, is busy reporting, no more technical, no more technical. Don't like technical. It's all right with me. I mean, it's... It was the viewpoint of the seminar leader. But this afternoon, or yesterday afternoon, rather, a gentleman came in to see me and told me that that lecture had straightened it all out for him. He'd come over here, dragged over here, you might say, and was totally... Unwilling to go further in Scientology and so forth. Didn't see what he was doing and all that. Heard that lecture on create and destroy. All of a sudden, it all added up, bing. And right in there pitching. See what he's doing now. Going right out. Help us all he can. You'll find that technical lectures land in strange places. And sometimes some bird talking to two-thirds of the audience, you know, and they even walk, you know what you're talking about and so on. But that remaining one-third will be getting it. Be getting it good and heavy. Anytime you water something down just on the basis that nobody will understand it, you're slightly guilty of an overt act. Because you've kept it away from those amongst them that would understand it. So you find me quite routinely saying, well, this may be too much for you over your heads, and if so, why, that's rough, just bear with it, and we'll be giving you something that's a little more for you very shortly, and then go ahead and give them gin. But in a place like a Congress, it's no place to come out with ACC data. Because you go too far along this line, you go too far, that requires HPA-level understanding to know what you're talking about, and you'll introduce a confusion, so there's a happy medium here. Now, if every HCOB that was issued to people who knew what they were doing was released broadly to people who hadn't a clue, here and there you'd get areas of confusion where they would be doing something that they didn't quite understand and shifting off of things and so on. And they ordinarily play the game, just because we have something new, everything old is gone. Now that is a symptom of somebody who doesn't know the old. See? And people Q&A all over the place. But at the same time, it is better to release what you know to the length of time that you can know it, even though the questions in your mind is whether or not somebody can latch on to this. We just had an experience of this. Now, I'm going to talk to you now about something that is very, very, very technical with regard to create, survive, destroy, and so forth. And just all in a hurry here, I'm just going to try to give you the total gin on it, okay? Works like this. There's differentiation and identification. Identification, total and perfect identification is almost impossible. So more technically, it'd be differentiation and close similarity. One can tell the difference or can't tell the difference. That's what we mean actually by differentiation and identification. It isn't actually that the two things should be identified. It's that the person involved can't tell the difference between them. And that, to him, is identification. You got the idea? He says, a roof is a floor. Well, that isn't because a roof is a floor. That's because he's got these two things identified. And oddly enough, this is one of the oldest data of Scientology. This is 1938. One of the first things I found out. The thinkingness was the conceiving of similarities, differences, and identities. That was what thinking was. And that all that went wrong with thinking was incorrect differentiation, incorrect similarities, incorrect identities. Got it? Now, those people who show you a page out of Krishnamurti and tell you he said a lot of Scientology data are being very correct, but they don't notice he said a lot of other things. There is no evaluation of importance. And that is the rest of thinkingness. Differentiation, similarities, identities, and value, the degree of importance between data. Now, we say to a fellow who is about to go outside, we say it is raining outside. That's an important datum, isn't it? To a fellow who is staying inside, we say it is raining outside. That's an unimportant datum, isn't it? So, in most livingness, evaluation of importance is a moment-to-moment affair. Training, for instance, has to do with this factor. We discover that a fellow who was trained perfectly in electricity in 1890 wouldn't have a clue in 1959. You see, he just wouldn't have a clue. Now, he thinks all the things he learned in 1890 were vitally important. Well, they were for 1890, you see. Now, oddly enough, some of the things he learned are just as true in 1959. But if he was trained so that he couldn't sift out the important, that is to say, basic or fundamental truths, and if it was all taught to him as one big mishmash that he just all had to learn, there was nothing more important than anything else, he's dead. You see, the 70 years intervening there would be so great as to totally invalidate his whole education. Now, a mind must maintain its fluidity in the assignment of importance, its fluidity in differentiating, in conceiving similarities and identifications. When a mind is no longer able to sort out these things, you don't get thinkingness, you get machine behavior. Get the idea? The fellow in 1890, with his electricity, didn't learn Ohm's law or anything else, you see, as any different than galvanic attraction or something stupid that they had in 1890, you see, which since isn't. You know. Therefore, his education is no value to him at all. Therefore, any learning process or any livingness must be accompanied by inspection. If you omit inspection, if you omit deciding what is important, if you omit deciding how long it will be important, or how fundamental it is or not fundamental it is, you'll wind up with a mishmash on any subject under the sun. Do you understand that? That's all aberration is. That's all it is. A person has gotten a mishmash amongst a bunch of data and can't differentiate what's important and what's unimportant in that data. Now, in Scientology, we have done the near impossible. Dan didn't think it was possible. He couldn't have thought it was possible, or it would have been done long since. He would have broken down some sort of an anatomy of livingness, giving its bits, pieces, parts, fundamentals, and facts, don't you see? Well, now, a lot of fellows like Lucretius writing In the Nature of Things and doing a very important piece of work in Julius Caesar's time. Oh, he talks about atoms and he talks about some of the darndest things. And you go looking this thing over and you find out that this must have been a pretty smart boy. And that's true, he was a pretty smart boy. But he didn't assign the relative importance of any of these data. And there's an awful lot of data in there that doesn't belong there at all, and it just runs along like a river of water. Now, there was a fellow by the name Gautama Siddhartha. Gautama Buddha. And the Buddhists call it one date, and the historians call it another date. Well, I suppose the Buddhists probably right, and something on the order of about 543 or something like that BC, some such date. People are always arguing about this date, and we don't care about that. Because it's an unimportant datum except to plot him up against existing knowledge. We find this fellow Gautama Buddha coming forth with a tremendous amount of knowledge. It was the most knowledge that had been seen, you see, at that time. And it tended to take apart beingness and livingness better than anybody had taken apart beingness and livingness. And by the way, he was going forward in the tradition of a monk, and this they get all messed up about because they talk about the Dharma. And Gautama Buddha followed along with his knowledge in the tradition of the Dharma and all of this. And the Dharma was apparently this or that. And then they kind of overlooked the fact that there was a monk named Dharma about 10,000 years ago who gave the original Dharma. But it's called Dharma because his name was Dharma and actually is in the tradition which was followed by Buddha. And once more, we get a tremendous number of truths with no evaluation of importance. Got the idea? Now, what they've missed all the way along the line is just this one factor of evaluation of importance and the ability to differentiate the important from the unimportant. And to conceive the similarities of these data so as to bring about an orderly, logical inspection. There have been an awful lot of bright men along the line, but they neglected those facts. Therefore, in training somebody, if you neglect those facts, you're again handing him some kind of a mishmash. You're compounding the felony all over again. And if you say, on some bodies, the valences are impressed in sequence. Remember the old picture in Scientology 880? The valences are impressed in sequence on the body. You say at the same time, axiom 10. Now, believe me, those data are not of comparable importance at all.
Yeah, they're simply an observation. See, the pattern of valences on a body and so forth is just an interesting look. Well, that certainly doesn't rank with Axiom 10. No rank between the two at all. But those two things get, on importance, get identified. They don't identify the two data, but they say they're on this same plane. And that is the first step to a total identification. So eventually you get some sort of a datum emerging like this. The highest purpose of the universe is to have valences impressed on the body. It goes insane. But the first thing that drops out is the evaluation of importance. That's the first thing that drops out. So in teaching somebody, you say, this is an important datum. Or this is an interesting datum. You read a lot of HCOBs, I'll say it's interesting that. It's not important that. It's just interesting. Now, people get all mixed up with truth and what's truth. And we've taken this up a lot of times in this old hat. But I'll say it again because it's very easy to state. The only absolute truths there are axioms 1 and 2. There are no other absolute truths. You say absolutes are unobtainable. Well, unfortunately, those two truths are obtainable. That's true. And everything that proceeds from there is simply somebody's consideration agreed upon, which has become a fact. You see how that is. Axiom 10, the highest purpose of the universe, creation and effect. All right, that's fine. The cycle of action, create, survive, destroy. That is the cycle of action. Fine, it's a fact. It's a fact. And in a sort of relative sense, it's true. But you see, you consider there's a Thetan, you see, and he's the prime mover unmoved that everybody's been looking for. That's the prime mover unmoved. There's no sense going back of that because you just find another Thetan. Even if you found that all Thetans proceed from one Thetan or something of the sort, you'd still get to Axiom 1. It doesn't matter the subdivisions or split-offs or valence shifts or anything else of Thetans. It hadn't anything to do with the price of fish. That's just what happens to Thetans. But Axiom 1's still true. And it's true that Thetans make things. And it's true that they postulate. And everything else is the product of the postulates or the product of the creations, and all those things are products of the Thetans. So Axiom 10 is Axiom 10 simply because you and everybody else said, well, the highest purpose of the universe, creation, effect. If you hadn't said it, you wouldn't be here. You'd be in some other universe, maybe. See, where the highest purpose of the universe is little. God knows what that would be. But the production of an effect is simply an agreement. It's a postulate, which is agreed upon, becomes a consideration, and becomes such a deep-seated consideration that is so overlaid with all other consideration, is so pounded in, is so hardly hammered down that we can say it's truth. But remember, after the original truths, you can take apart every other truth there is in this whole universe. And that is an important fact.
that is so important that if you forget it, you'll someday be sitting up nights worrying about all the people you spun in. Okay, because you'll keep telling people, it's an absolute truth. Axiom 10, unchangeable, irrevocable, that's it. Got the idea? Oh, man, all you're doing is pounding in an agreement that's already drove everybody nuts. Now, some idea of this is contained in this factor. The cycle of action is one of these things just like Axiom 10. Postulated, considered, agreed upon. Becomes irrevocable. That's the way it is. Boy, does a tree believe this. Wow. Boy, that tree is sitting there saying, create, survive, destroy. Create, survive, destroy. I'm created by a little acorn that falls down, and then I survive for a long time, growing, growing, growing. And after a while, that will be all there is, so I'd better put out another acorn and get another tree growing, because that's the way it is. And there's no other way to do it. Well, that's it. Tree really believes that. Man. But it's not an irrevocable truth. But for the purposes of understanding a mind, it's fairly important. It's very senior as data, just like Axiom 10 is very senior as data. Quite an important datum, because if you didn't know it, you'll never take a mind apart. Now, one of the things that happens is a person gets to believing this real hard, and after a while, as a thetan, mind you, the fellow thinks of himself as having been created at birth and growing up and surviving and then dying. Oh, wow. You know, he doesn't say a body does this, you see. He says, I do it. And he believes this so implicitly that he wipes out all of the past. And he doesn't remember past the point, because you couldn't remember earlier than that, because you weren't, see? And you've got a whole Western society at this time absolutely dedicated to the fact. Now, the Catholic Church, like everybody else, is falling down the line into this. When you're dead, you're awful dead. They send you to some place to play a harp, and brother, being in some cabaret playing a harp for the rest of existence as good as dead. And they all believe that when you're dead, you're dead. What a wonderful irresponsibility. The commissioner of works down here builds a dam that won't hold water and gives inadequate supply to the city. Because when he's dead, he's dead. He's real dead when he's dead. I had a professor in a university, professor of biology of all things, Columbia University, who is now dead, who told me that he didn't have to worry about the atom bomb because it didn't matter which way he was going to be killed. He was going to die sooner or later anyway. And he wouldn't have to worry about it. Well, I pulled an overt act. I didn't sit there and say, you nut, you idiot. I can see it now. There you are in St. Vincent's Hospital in New York City saying, wah! And you didn't even bother to tell any of your students that they ought to do anything about this or have a better understanding of it, because it didn't matter to you. Well, this commissioner of the waterworks he has the privilege of living in a home
but is inadequately supplied with water, having built the waterworks. You get the idea. He becomes the effect of his own cause. And people are always doing that. They say, well, I've got nothing whatsoever to do with the future. That's just, oh, I'll be dead, you know. I'll be real dead. So on. So it really doesn't matter what I do. So I don't... That's their beautiful excuse for not contributing to their environment, you see. So this create, survive, destroy has a lot of believers. But someday, just for amusement... Why don't you run, this is not necessarily a therapeutic process at all. Why don't you run something like invent a cycle of action on some Scientologist for an hour or two? Well, you talk about confusion that starts off that right at the beginning and he eventually flattens it out and he can invent one that's destroy, survive, and at all times you go over roller coasters or something, you know. He'll eventually get one that's perfectly as logical to him as the cycle of action is. He'll say, well, it's just as logical to be. The thing to do is that if you destroy something you've created, then it will survive. That's a perfectly good cycle of action, and that's the way it is, you know. And he's satisfied with that as something else. Something also will happen to his ideas of age and his body aging factor. It's not a good process. You see, it's just interesting, and you run it on somebody for a little while, and you find out what I say is true. It's not an irrevocable fact. It's a fact that can be as-is to knocked out and substituted for. Well, what kind of an irrevocable truth is this? And yet the monk Dharma handed it out as an irrevocable truth. I wouldn't say the old boy had a pitch or that he was paid by the opposition. You find these in the original Vedic hymn. You find that cycle of action. But boy, in there, that's truth. Truth ordained by God, never to be escaped from. That's it. You've had it, you poor mortal, stupid you. That's it. Don't ever change that because you're tampering with God. Horrible things will happen if you tamper with these great truths. Matter of fact, this Western society, there's, I'm sure here and there in this very room, somebody has been warned about tampering with the mind. One of the best reasons why you shouldn't tamper with the mind is you're liable to find out what they've been up to. Here's this thing, this cycle of action. It's important to this universe at this time right now. That's an important datum. But you could do something with it. Now, Axiom 10 is an important datum, too. And the oddity of it is they're evidently considered to be data of comparable magnitude because they mishmash. This is the rest of the gen I'm giving you. They identify. The person that just walked out in front of the building out there, you know, walked along, his crutches, just a person, has got these two things identified. Cycle of action and cause distance effect. The same thing. So that any cause or source finds at its receipt point destruction. Now you look that one over. That looks pretty crazy to you at first glimpse. But if you talk to him, you'll destroy him. Because it isn't cause, distance, effect, it's create. The survival of the line, destroy. So if you talk to him, you kill him. And if he talks to anybody, he'll kill him, and that's why he doesn't communicate with anybody. It's so weird as to be almost incredible. But, of course, you'd expect an aberration of some kind to be incredible.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
People don't communicate because they know what happens when they communicate. They destroy things. Got the idea? Communication is cause, distance, effect. But this to them is create, survive, destroy. That's a pretty low-scale case. As a matter of fact, you ask him to monkey around with lines, and he'll eventually have these things going from one corner of the room to the other. Lines, boy, are they solid. Wow. Terminals aren't there, but the lines are real solid. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to have a very low-scale case to have this happen. See? The lines are surviving, even with no terminals there, you see. The lines going from one corner of the room to the other corner of the room, one person to another person. Boy, these are factual. Nothing else is. Well, that's just the cycle of action and the communication formula, you see, twisted together. One is the other. Now, in order to live, you have to sing for your supper. There's a lot of advertising men believe this utterly. A lot of writers believe this, lecturers and so forth. They get it in reverse somehow or another. But the communication somehow must never quite arrive. Because they can communicate, but it must never quite arrive at any actual terminal. Because if it did, that would be destruction. Get the idea? Now, of course, as with any severe aberration, you can look this over from all of its various angles, and you'll just find... Oh, I would not venture to count the number of associations you could plot out. I'd say you could plot out two or three dozen associations consequent to those two important data being associated, and plot out all sorts of oddities that people must think or believe, and other data that is undoubtedly mixed in with them, you see, such as, in order to survive, it is necessary to duplicate. So therefore, you mustn't ever have a different kind of body than what you had in the last life. So therefore, somebody who's moved over into the human race is trying to work and act like a robot. Because to get create, survive, destroy, you see, part of the communication formula is duplication. So duplication has to do now with create, survive, destroy. Even though he thinks this is a brand new cycle of action, he nevertheless is dragging a robot body up and down the streets of New York or Johannesburg or Melbourne. He never quite did join the human race because the cycle of action very successfully applied to robot bodies. You see. So now, in order to go through any cycle of action, you have to have a robot body. But what's the significance of it? The total significance of it is he's got a cycle of action mixed up with a communication formula, which has duplication mixed up with it. You got it? People are always going around saying, you look just like Daddy, you know. Every boy looks just like you, or something like that. And this is a sure guarantee that survival will take place. Okay? Well, just look at that as a mislaid piece of the communication formula you've got to make. It does happen. It is very flattering. For instance, it's very amusing to see little Arthur. He looks just like me. Very, very amusing to see this little boy going around and so on. I don't see much of him, about once a day, something like that. But wildly enough, of all the children, man, does he communicate with me. He is a chattering magpie where his daddy's concerned. But he's got survival taped. In some fashion, he's got the communication formula mixed up with it. Well, whatever the score is, let's look at this as a nice, great, big mishmash. The production of an effect would be the destruction of a target.
What else does the military believe? And why is it that people, when they get out of the military, feel so caved in? They do. They do feel caved in. Because they're at the end of cycle of action of the military. And the cycle of action of the military, of course, would be destruction, totally. And that's peculiarly apt. Whenever you try to demob a bunch of soldiers, you get tremendous numbers in hospitals. Well, obviously, they've reached the end of the cycle of action, and they're destroyed. That's it. And if you try to talk to them, why, they feel they're further destroyed. And if they try to talk to you, all they talk to you about is destructive or destruction. Get the idea? Destruction. Now, as an understanding of human nature, these data are quite important. Now, it isn't that there's just an automatic slip in time between create and destroy on the cycle of action. That is an oversimplified statement. What there is an identification between the communication formula and the cycle of action so that any creation winds up in a belief of destruction. You got it? So that anybody who communicates to anybody is therefore trying to destroy them, so the thing to do is to destroy anybody who is communicating. But the people who are communicating are obviously creating, so anybody who creates must be destroyed. You get how these various parts interplay? This is sufficiently important to the artist or to anybody in the society that I'm shortly going to write a book on this subject called The Rehabilitation of Artistry. And it'll probably be a very popular book. See? It's got good dissemination factors because an artist can lash onto this rather easily. He knows why the critics are taking him to pieces now. I know now why universities destroy writers and painters. It's observable they do. There were 280,000 bachelors of arts graduated from American universities in 1949. 280,000 bachelors of arts, not one of whom could write, paint, or dance. Well, that's fascinating. How could this be? Well, I know how it could be because I know these jerks. I mean, these professors. The kid pours his heart out in the theme, see? And after somebody's done that for 3 or 4 years, of course he can't write anymore. So they graduate him. Now this factor came home to me when I was president of the American Fiction Guild before the war. We did a survey. Brought out, by the way, by a dining salon conversation. And afterwards we did a survey on this thing. And we counted noses and found that amongst all the writers that were making their coffee and cakes in America, nobody had ever graduated from a university majored in writing. But the only people who had become literary critics. And couldn't write. Isn't that fascinating? Now, it very easily fits up into the big span, the big spectacular span of the actress who does a beautiful rendition, the Sarah Bernhardts and so forth of the world, and comes out and does a terrific act and so forth, and gets chopped up as a consequence one way or the other. Yeah, oh, that's very spectacular. When you realize that to hold down a job, you've got to keep the job created, you realize that you must, if there's somebody around who is fairly low scale, doing a skid or an identification between the cycle of action and Axiom 10, that it'd be as much as your life's worth to create the post you're on. You see that? And yet, in order to do a job at all, you've got to create the post. Otherwise, you're simply going to survive with the post. That's all mostly government bureaucracies are doing.
nobody's doing a job. Everybody is simply surviving on the job. The job must go on. And boy, you give most governments and clerical bureaus or something like that something to do. Brother, does it go on and on and on. Nothing ever gets done. See? Because they're too close in. Now you get a very constructive fellow on the job, and he says, gee whiz, you're trying to build waterworks all over the countryside here. Well, let's see. I'll get some contractor friends, and we'll go over this thing. We'll see how many waterworks we can build and what the thing will be cost. And let's see. We could probably get a loan from the bank because this is good business and so forth. And we don't even have cost us a penny of the taxpayers' money. We'll just go ahead and build these things. All I got to do is get the signature on the contract. And just get permission from the head office here, a little thing like that. Second, he presents this project, you see. You're fired! Get out! Try to do something. Well, don't think it's very strange that he got that way, because he's on a job, a type of job he's never supposed to create on. The job is merely supposed to endure in some fashion. And any creative action is met with a destructive bang. It's in a sort of a low-scale mishmash. You got the idea? Well, now that, if you ever had an impulse to play the pananer, or anything of that sort, that's what cured you. You had some people around that did the skid. And you said, well, I'm going to learn to play the piano. And you sat down and you started to learn to play the piano and so forth. You were trying to do something new. In other words, you were trying to start a cycle of action. Now, unless such a person had forced you to play the piano and was able to destroy you by getting you to play the piano, your own self-generated impulse immediately wound up with being destroyed one way or the other. People sit there and make sure that you never learned how to play the piano, brother. If you did learn how to play the piano, well, that was over everybody's dead body. You get the idea? Now, just a few of these skids are apparently enough, because it keys you in. But what it doesn't key in is criticism and all that sort of thing, and valences and all that. That isn't what it keys in. It tends to key in on you an identification of these two things, the cycle of action and creation of an effect, in Axiom 10. You say, well, I better not go on trying to learn how to play the piano, because I'm obviously over here in Axiom 10, and the effect being created is destruction of me. So therefore, a piano playing is added to this growing pile of muck, all based on this original identification, see? So you added piano playing to it, and then you added sculpturing to it, and you added painting to it, and you added choreography to it, and you added collecting wildflowers to it, and collecting gasoline to it, and eventually you start adding holding down a job to it. It's about that time you've had it, see? You just finally added together all the artistic pursuits there were. As a matter of fact, a graduate from the Military Academy of the United States, or from Sandhurst, of just a century and a quarter ago, had to be very good with a sketch pad. He had to be pretty good at sketching. And now we're not talking about engineering sketching. Today he has to be good at copying lines and doing engineering sketching. He had to be pretty good. He had to make birds look like birds and bees look like bees, you know? He had to be fast on the draw. And some of the sketches that emerge from those particular areas are quite interesting. You'll find letters of the period and so forth. They're writing to somebody or their wife or something like that. You'll find over in the border of the thing quite often, you'll find a sketch of a Bengal Lancer or something of the sort, you know. It's something they didn't think much about. A creative action or an impulse was something they just didn't consider was very important, you know. I'm talking now about the military, you know, and the military's always downscaled pretty far on this destroy business. two or three centuries ago, it was a peculiar officer that couldn't write or organize a play for his mess. People would have thought there was something awfully wrong with him, you know. Couldn't write music. Not worth much, worked much. Must be sour, sullen sort of fellow, you know. Well, you can trace this, all I'm trying to show you is you can trace this in modern times. Right straight back for just a few hundred years, and you will see that this identification has been catching up with great rapidity. And those things which are made artistically are made more and more to survive, demonstrating the anxiety of it. It isn't enough to play a play in front of 300 or 400 people and then skip it. Hell's bells, no. The thing has got to go before this division. Get the idea? It's got to be filmed, and it's a tremendous production, and it gets in the cans, it's duplicated all over the place, and tremendous costs are involved in it, and there's tremendous lawsuits if anybody tries to steal any part of its songs, and even the songs in it. Anybody down here in a cabaret that plays one of the songs out of Oklahoma, you see why they have to send so much money someplace else. And, oh, man. Now, in our present age, two of the most interesting art items are utilitarian, the automobile and the house. And these are art items. But they're building them in there pretty solid these days. Art is going solid, which is to say, create has moved up a little further on the survive line. Get the idea? It isn't so much original create, it's on the survive line. Till we find, well, one of the great. This is not a trend that's taking place right now. This trend has been going on since about 1880. But we find a fellow like Frank Lloyd Wright, the architect who built the skyscrapers up in Tokyo that stood up in all the earthquakes. He put them on rollers. They know how to build skyscrapers up there now. All of his patterns of artistry and so forth. He older had one of his houses in Arizona, and he'd gotten up to a point where he was... the walls had to support nothing in this house. It was rather... lovely house. It was a copy of a Mediterranean cabana, sort of swollen up and built around a swimming pool with all glass fronts, that sort of thing. But it didn't have to support anything. The walls had to support practically nothing. And he had them 3.5 feet thick. One-story structure, you know, with a little shed roof on it. 3.5 feet. You find out they start nailing it into iron and nickel chrome, and further, they just can't create something, you know, and then eat it up or something like this. It's got to be important, it's got to survive, and so forth, because they're starting to resist that destroy. There was a time when a cook prepared dinner, why, they did it all with squares and little, what you call it, some thingamabobs and three-tiered cakes, and the fish were all laid out and so forth. And good heavens, you'd thought it was a banquet for a king or something like that. But that was just dinner, and it didn't take them very much time to do it. And they thought that was fun and so on. You don't find very many cooks like that anymore. They cooked that steak to survive. Now, what this all amounts to is simply this. You're basically trying to separate two key data. The communication formula, which stems from Axiom 10, you realize, or is closely associated with Axiom 10, and the cycle of action. You're trying to separate these things out. And when you get these two things separated out, well, you got it made. Well, a way to separate anything out of a mind is to discharge its automaticity. Get the mind to do what the mind is doing. That's the old saw. Get the mind to do what the mind is doing. And what's the mind doing in this particular case? The mind is identifying an effect with a cycle of action. So you run either sides of this. You run the communication side of it. From where could you communicate to a blank? And you'll get somewhere. By the way, that's a good, stable, steady process. Best addressed to immediate visible objects such as bodies or aches and pains of the body and so forth. There's no process quite as hot as that one. That replaces all the old hellos and okays to body parts. And oh, there's a whole category of various calm processes. These things are all replaced by this calm process from where could you communicate to or any version thereof. That's fine, particularly on visible things. I've seen some fantastic things occur with that particular process. Now, that process is about the best we've got on the communication level. It is the best we've got. It is purely a communication process. But there's another process, years and years and years old, that kicks Axiom 10 into full re-stim, the dull click. And you wouldn't believe anything as mild as this would have as much effect. It was originally used in group processing, and you possibly have heard of it, but I doubt very much that you've ever run it on an individual PC. It's about 1954. And that is, look around here and find something that's producing an effect on something. Now, that starts shooting a time track to pieces in the weirdest possible way. It starts shooting people up into the future and so forth. But what it's doing is re-stimulating the cycle of action. It's not necessarily the finest process there is, but it's a good process. It's not a comparable magnitude as a process to calm processes. It's merely one that addresses itself as the best process on Axiom 10. That is purely and simply the introduction of effect into a process. It's pretty good. Now, it goes along with overt with whole straight wire, which is a better process. It's not quite on the groove, you see, of Axiom 10, but it's a better process. It does more. Overt with whole straight wire. That's a very, very, very nice process. That can run on a specific terminal, run on a general terminal, and run on any dynamic, practically. Nice process, because it's almost pure reach-withdraw coupled with overt-act motivator ideas. Nice one. And of all the processes issued at that time, why, that one is most calculated to survive. That's very fine. And then we get over to a process series that I will have to talk about at much, much greater length called the Create Series. Not to create process, called to create series. Because if we said create process, we'd have old-time creative processes coming up all the time and smacking us around. Well, it's actually a whole series of processes. And it has to do with utilizing the characteristics of the slip, that skid on the cycle of action. It's very simple. You'd merely get the PC to create and confront anything which the PC is destroying or wasting. Simple as that. It can be said in a breath, but that breath, I'm afraid, would take a lot longer to go on than we have at this time. The slip phenomenon is something, until you see it, subjectively, or in a PC, you'd hardly believe it. Fantastic. fantastic. Well, this fellow just can't think of pie, that's all. See, he can think of destroyed pie. You say, you know, I'll get an idea of making some pie. And he says, yes, I have gotten an idea of destroying some pie, you know. And you'll find cases just can't get it through their heads that you were saying create some pie, because they know what you're saying. You're saying destroy some pie. Got the idea? Now, pie, that's an easy one to see, but how about this one? The nihilists of 1862 developed in Russian universities and eventually swelled up into the various other lines, which more or less gave an empire to communism. Well, the nihilists demanded certain things be done. They were the beatnik generation of 1862. They were sloppy. They listened to sad music. They thought they were all weary and so on. It just sounds just exactly like Esquire, 1959. And they decided that many reforms must take place and that there must be a revolution. Well, the Tsar, by 1905, had granted every single reform proposed by the nihilists. Every single reform. They said that wasn't good enough, there had to be a revolution. That's basically all that's wrong with communism today. There has to be a revolution. If you did everything the communist wanted, everything he wanted, you'd still have to have a revolution. See, there had to be a revolution. See, in order to create a new state, it'd have to be destroyed, of course. Is that the idea? There has to be a revolution. The Tsar gave them everything they were supposed to have, all the reforms that just they were demanded, they were all met, and so forth, and he said, well, that's all very well, but there has to be a revolution. If you wound up in charge of it, there has to be a revolution. Now, when are you going to give us a revolution? He didn't give them a revolution. He wasn't smart enough. He could have given them a revolution, you know. They'd all been very happy with it, and they'd been sure. Now, a thetan knows when to start creating a new body. It's when the old one is destroyed. And that's an automaticity that you run into, and you'll get a PC mighty puzzle sometimes between creating one and destroying one. So much so that mothers very often have a hard time giving birth. You get the various identifications associations regarding this. Well, there's a lot to know about this particular Create series, a lot of things that it does. Basically, the processes are very powerful, unbelievable. All you do is strip off the automaticities of the cycle of action, and the communication formula falls out of it. In other words, there are several ways to attack this problem. First, there's the calm processes, and you've got the various effect processes, like overt withhold, straight wire is the best one of these. And then you've got this Create series. And these other two, you will believe, are the palest of pale and the slightest of slight. You wonder why you ever thought there was any punch. And from where could you communicate 2A and from overt withhold straight wire? Because this Create series is just blows the PC's head off. Particularly if you do it right and you pick your way exactly through the bank and you hit the button right on the head and you flatten it, you've got it made. Now, if you don't do those things, you just kill the PC and you yourself have run the cycle of action. And you would have to be audited on the overt withhold straight wire on the PC. But the main thing to know about this rationale is the identification of some of the basic, most important rules and laws of Scientology, of course, results in the most aberrated condition. And we're pretty close to have walked into it when I found finally that the cycle of action was confused with Axiom 10. And so thoroughly confused that I wonder how anybody ever created anything. And that's basically why the whole universe is surviving. When this class goes through, if there's still a universe here, it means we're pretty good at putting one back together. Thank you.